Blessed are the weird people.
Poets.
Misfits.
Painters.
Writers.
Troubadours.
For they teach us to see the world through different eyes.
This is Blessed Are the Weird on Empower Radio.
EmpowerRadio.com.
Here's your host, Jacob Nordby.
Hello, hello everyone. This is Jacob Nordby, and we are broadcasting from Empower Radio's satellite location here in Boise, Idaho, which, as I sometimes mention, is where the sky is bluer and the fish are bigger and everything's just a little bit more awesome. Now, we have a special guest on who's from an equally awesome place, some would argue even more awesome, but we'll get to that in just a moment. Before we get started, I want to bring to you from the Bureau of Internal Truth and Beauty. For those of you who haven't heard this, and some haven't, probably many haven't actually, I want to bring you the Beatitudes for the Weird, because this sets up the conversation we're getting ready to have with our guest, the Beatitudes for the Weird. Blessed are the weird people, poets, misfits, writers, mystics, heretics, painters, and troubadours, for they teach us to see the world through different eyes. Blessed are those who embrace the intensity of life's pain and pleasure, for they shall be rewarded with uncommon ecstasy. Blessed are ye who see beauty in ugliness, for you shall transform our vision of how the world might be. Blessed are the bold and whimsical, for their imagination shatters ancient boundaries of fear for us all. Blessed are ye who are mocked for unbridled expression of love in all its forms, because your kind of crazy is exactly that freedom for which the world is unconsciously begging. Blessed are those who have endured breaking by life, for they are the resplendent cracks through which the light shines. And that's with inspiration from Jesus Christ, Rumi, John Lennon, and other weird people. Now, had I known when I wrote that the other weird people would include our guest, I would have been quite excited, because she represents so many, maybe all of what I just mentioned. I won't put all of that on her. But we're excited to welcome Sarah Beek to the show today. And Sarah is a Harvard-trained scholar of comparative world religions. She spent the years traveling the world studying spirituality, and we're going to hear about that, so I won't read the entire list, but it's exciting and impressive. But she is the author of The Red Book, which came out in 06. It was the deliciously unorthodox approach to igniting your divine spark. And then just recently, actually July 1st, just released Red, Hot, and Holy, A Heretic's Love Story, which, as you can imagine, when I saw that one word, a heretic's love story, it sparked my memory that I had seen and read parts of the Red Book years ago. And so when I saw that, I immediately reached out to Sarah and said, we would love to have you come and talk with the Blessed Are the Weird community. So without a whole lot more ado, Sarah, welcome to our program. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's a real honor, and I love what you wrote. I love the Beatitudes of the Weird. I wish I had that when I was a little girl. I wish, like, all kids grew up with that, so they just knew that they could let their freak shine and that it was actually a service to this world. So thank you for writing that.
Oh, well, thank you. And, you know, I'm sitting here reading. It's funny. I was looking at the Red Book on Amazon, and some other stuff about your new book, Sarah. And I noticed that most that frequently bought together is your book and one of my very favorites of all times, Rob Bregney's Pronoia.
Oh yeah, I love him.
Which should not surprise anyone, I guess. But to me, that just says, all right. So this Sarah Beek lady is definitely going to be a welcome guest. So I'm tickled, and I could sit here and kind of go on and on. In fact, the problem is it's only a half hour show. So if I talk at all, it's going to get in the way of hearing your story. And I wanted to hear that, because you just said something. You said, I wish I'd had that when I was a little girl. And I grew up in a fundamentalist cult, which made your strict upbringing as a Catholic, we thought you were the dirty heathens who were going straight to hell. So,
perspective.
Yeah, isn't that fun? Yeah. So, but yeah, as you say, perspective. So let's start there for a minute, though. I want to know what happened to a Catholic girl who grew up the way you did, to go to Harvard, to travel the world, and I want to hear, because I did not read some of the list of things you got up to as a young lady, but I want you to share some of the things that you've been up to in your crazy journey, which led up to writing, you know, A Heretic's Love Story and the Red Book and things like. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, definitely. Well, as a child, I think like many children, I felt connected to something bigger than me, and I didn't know exactly what it was, but because I was raised Catholic, that the lens of Catholicism made me think, you know, it was God and it was Jesus, and it was wonderful, and it was very it served me really well as a child, and I very much wanted to be a priest. And I would write "I heart God" and all my like homework assignments, and I was just kind of madly in love with God and with the divine. And then, when I was in sixth grade, I found a book about reincarnation, and I just thought it was fascinating. Like I didn't know, I didn't have these big, grand like beliefs about it, but I just something in it resonated with me, and it was more the point that it just expanded my Catholic universe into something really big. And I quickly realized, you know, the church was not down with reincarnation. And so I left the church really respectfully, but quite certainly. And I decided just to explore, because this passion of mine was very strong. So I read everything I could get my hands on, any sort of spiritual book or religious book or New Age book, and that carried me through high school. And then when I got to college, the natural translation of that passion in school was to study religions and especially mysticism academically. And then that led me to travel around the world and experience more of their lived reality, because there's a huge difference between, you know, reading a book about a religion or a culture or a mystical practice and then actually going and visiting it. So I was lucky enough to be able to do that, and worked my way around different countries and just studied as much as I can, and that continued to graduate school. And after graduate school, I wrote the Red Book. And the reason I wrote the Red Book that came out in 2006 was just because I noticed that so many women that I was meeting, and men too, but this book was mostly focused on women, they were so curious about spirituality, but when they went to a traditional religion or even a New Age derivative, they didn't feel all of themselves reflected back at them. They didn't have this sort of natural placement within that, because women have not been heard or welcome in traditional religions, and even many of their New Age derivatives. So I wrote the book just to remind women to take their spiritual journey back into their own hands, and that they could do it in a way that was really authentic and fresh and meaningful and deeply connected for them, and it didn't have to look like anybody else's. And so that led me out into the world, and led me to do talks and workshops and a film and get another contract with another book publisher. And then in 2009, I really had what I call as a Rouge Awakening, where I realized that despite my passion for the divine and despite my at that point kind of successful career in women's spirituality, I had somehow lost connection with my soul. Mm-hmm. And I pulled back from my social and professional life and went into what I call like the red tent, which is sort of a physical and spiritual cocoon for 4 years. And in that space, really had to let go of so much of what I thought I was, so much of what I thought I was here to do, do the personal work and shadow work and kind of just get my ass kicked by the universe. And then that's where Red Hot and Holy came out.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, and what a commitment. I love that part right there. Because I've noticed, Sarah, I've been in this sort of mind, body, spirit, spirituality world for a while, and I've noticed that a lot of people who have a breakthrough and get out there in the world and start teaching or speaking or writing or whatever end up getting into a guru thing, and it becomes its own dogma. And seems to me that if life keeps asking us to move forward with it, keep going on, you know, life with a capital L, keep going. And if we're not willing to leave that structure behind, and do what you just said, go into the red tent, go into the cave, it can turn back into a hollow shell, just like the old stuff, can't it?
Very much so. Very much so. And I think that was a huge wake-up call for me, because I had to face, like, not only, you know, my own shadows and kind of unconscious reasons for why I was out in the world, you know, trying to share this information, but I also had to really come up close with kind of the shadow side of the mainstream spirituality arena. And so our internal shadows, you know, sort of project outwards and match the ones that are going on more of a collective level. And it was, it's a very seductive arena, and it is very confusing for many of us because it's a spiritual arena. So everyone there is talking the talk of wanting to help empower you and wanting to help you connect deeper. And it's beautiful, you know, and on one hand, and on the other hand, like anything really light and beautiful, it has a shadow as well. And for me, it was very important to, like I said, face that within myself and honestly, like, not be so naive and recognize that that was also a huge part of the arena that I was involved in. So part of what I really had to pull back from after I was, you know, dealing with my own shadows was also just that notion and having to be really vigilant about my own work and really careful with who and what I was interacting with and what felt authentic to my soul and what felt like it was sort of leaking my soul a little bit or allowing it to be violated a little bit just in the name of trying to help other people or trying to sell more books or, you know, it gets very tricky in this arena.
Very, very tricky. I so agree. In fact, it's one of the reasons I almost never published my first book, Sarah, which we're not talking about that right now, but I really felt that seduction. And I had a lot of fear, and it's interesting, isn't it, to dance with that fear and say, okay, so I'm here, I have something to say, I feel it, but then to go back into it and to realize this is, you know, the machine that is driven by profit and all that stuff. I've had to learn to forgive it and dance with it, but it can be pretty, it can swallow us, can't it?
It definitely can, and that's why, like, for me, you know, what I call soul and doing soul work is so important. It's been so foundational for me because there were so many times in the red tent where I really just felt like that was it. You know, I had to let go repeatedly of everything, and it was so difficult because it really felt like what I was doing before I went into the red tent was authentic for my heart. It really felt like, you know, I've had this calling since I was a little girl to be of service, and I wanted to be a priest. You know, like it had this like natural extension for me. And I think that's true for all of us who are called in this way or just have that really, you know, deep desire to be of service and to offer our gifts. But then it's like, you know, that deep desire is going to hit an external world, and it's going to have to navigate that really consciously and really carefully. And it's unique for each one of us, like what feels, you know, like it's actually supporting our soul and really supporting other people's souls, and what actually feels like it's taking a little bit away, but under the guise of being spiritual or being of service. And this body practice and an energetic practice, so it's a daily practice. And yes, I really respect it, and it's taught me a ton, and it's still teaching me, and I've learned the hard way.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny, yesterday as I was doing some research for today's show, I got your, you know, because I went to your website, which just as a matter of fact, let me mention that right now. So to connect with Sarah Beek and learn more about the books and about all this one, there's so much to read and experience on your site, and it's all very engaging. So go to sarahbeek.com, which is S-E-R-A Beek. B-E-A-K, sarahbeek.com. So anyway, I went to her website before and got signed up. And so just yesterday, as I was researching for the show, boing, in my email box pops up Red Love Bites. And this I just got this, and my soul said yes. So I have to read it to you, sir. It says, Firecracker, no one needs anyone, priest, S, healer, teacher, guru, or anything, special blessings, a vegan diet, a yoga practice, lineage transmissions, light body activations, crystals from Brazil, or even enlightenment in order to consciously connect with the divine ever. We just need the radically brave willingness to go in, and then in some more. I love that so much because it just doesn't allow us to get stuck in the next form of dogma, does it?
No, it won't, you know, and that's something that I feel like our souls or our hearts or whatever we want to call them, our divine sparks, our beings, that path of going in, it almost has this, it's a fire path, because anything that we're clinging to or anything that we might replace our own soul with will come up for a face-off and will have to be burned through. And that doesn't mean that, you know, external things or practices or techniques or crystals aren't helpful, you know, for us at certain points. But, you know, when I was in the Red Tent, I made this distinction between reaching out and receiving in. And it's a very, a real practice of discernment of like, why am I really reading this book or going to this workshop or listening to this teacher or doing this technique, and really questioning myself and being willing to see that if, you know, why I'm doing that, if it's for just authentic, you know, this is a natural reason I'm doing it, or if there's a reason, like I'm coming from a place of lack, or I'm hoping this thing will give me something that I feel I don't have right now, or I'm hoping it will give me more divine power, or I'm hoping it will make me feel what it's promising to make me feel in 7 weeks or less, or, you know, this whole thing out there. And right. Then receiving in is a very different feeling, where it's just like something shows up and it has this sort of natural embrace with your own being, and it doesn't feel like you already know you're whole and you don't really need it, but it has this sort of like, this deeper resonance of like, there could be an authentic exchange here and I could learn something here, but I'm not grasping at it because I think I need it or I'm lacking something.
Such a critical realization. And you know, what I wanted to point out too, Sarah, that, you know, as I heard you say, well, before, you know, before it felt really true. And what I've discovered is that, yeah, life keeps burning down my sacred temples if I'm willing to keep going, right? I mean,
yeah.
And that's the fear, though, because if I go and build a new sacred temple or a new castle, and I'm not willing to keep going down the path with life, then I'm just willing to stay stuck, you know?
Yeah.
Now, I wanted to ask you, because I just got a note from the producer. We're down under 10 minutes on the show, and the couple things I want to know. So you do work all over the place. In fact, I see here on your site you have an event in Berkeley coming up at the end of July, and you have one in New York coming up in September. Some great stuff there. But you do work all over the place, and when people show up to you or to one of your events or workshops, and you're able to connect with them, Sarah, what are they most hungry for? What do they want the most when they show up? What are they saying to you?
They want a more conscious and direct connection with their own being, with their own soul. And that's really the only thing that I do these days, is remind people that they have it and that it's there. And we work together in ways that feel really authentic and organic and natural for them to just make that relationship with their own being that much more intimate and alive and active and present in their life. So it's not about like teaching techniques or giving dogma. It is sharing my perspective at certain points, because that's how I communicate, is through my story. But it's very much about pointing them back in their own direction over and over and over again. And this is because we're so used to looking outwards, you know, for the answers. And I've just, like I said, learned the hard way that that's not really going to help anybody, you know? So it's kind of like holding up a big mirror to everybody who shows up and just asking them to really gaze deeply at their own divinity and to take that seriously.
It's amazing. It's so refreshing. I said we had some things in common, and we do, and there's plenty of things we don't have in common, like I'm not a Harvard scholar, and I haven't gone and seen the Dalai Lama. There's a whole lot of things you've done that are really cool, so I kind of envy some of that, frankly. But one thing I'm curious about, too, is what are people afraid of? Like, you're holding up this big mirror. Oh, I'm sorry. And I apparently have a little ADD. So what I was going to say is what I realize, and one thing it seems like we have in common, Sarah, is the age of the guru is over. So your fierce determination to not get into the guru thing, I can feel that. I can see it in your writing. And I think that's just hugely refreshing that you're just saying, look, I'm a mirror. I want you to see yourself, not me.
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah, exactly.
So what are people afraid of, though? So they show up and they want this. They want this connection. But obviously, they must be terrified of you because you're a fierce,
I'm like Midwestern, you know, raised in Chicago. So that's what's great about it. I have freckles. I'm shy. I'm awkward. Like,
right.
I got it both going on. I like anybody else out there. I have like the full human spectrum there on display on purpose, you know. It's really powerful for me to witness, you know, and other people, like the freedom to be fully human and also to bring your gifts at the same time. So my imperfections are very strong and I'm proud of them. But the thing people I find are most afraid of, which is the great paradox, and, you know, is themselves, is their own divinity. So that's why this work is so intense, is that on one hand, we are desperately aching to reunion with our own being and with our own divinity. And at the same time, on a deeper, more shadowy level, there is nothing that scares us more. Because when we start to do that authentically, we are going to have to go through both the light and the dark of ourselves. And we are going to have to face all the things in our life that might not be in alignment with that divinity that we are, or that are in alignment with our divinity. But life begins to change very, very strongly when we start to just claim ourselves, because we stop making so many inauthentic compromises. We start understanding when we're being false. We start having to speak our truth more and more and more. And things change. Things start to change. So it's this kind of glorious, hilarious paradox of like what we want the most, we are the most scared of as well.
Well, and oh man, I'm so glad you brought that up. So that was my next question. We're talking about some big things, and I love that you're bringing in words like, you know, shadow and archetype. I'm sitting here looking at the page on your site here for Red Hot and Holy, and you're talking about that you bring in the Hindu goddess Kali and Rumi and Eve and Lilith and Carl Jung and all these different things. So we're talking about some really big stuff, but can you help us understand what really can change about our lives if we go where you're inviting us, trying to seduce us to go here with ourselves?
That ache, you know, that we have had, I would venture to say, you know, not just in this life, but for lifetimes, sort of that human ache of wanting authentic, true love and connection. I feel that that's behind everything. Every single thing that we're doing in our life, every relationship, every addiction, every positive thing that we're doing, there is this sort of desire that is in us to, again, to reconnect with our own divinity. So when we just start taking that process can just start with a really honest invitation, just saying to our soul, you know, right in this moment, like, I'm actually ready to know you more. I'm ready to, like, know myself more. I'm ready to just bring the authentic nature that I am that much more into my awareness today. Be it in a conversation, the way I talk to my child, the way I walk through the park, the way I make my meal, the way I just talk to myself. I want to take that one more step in my own direction today and help me do this. And I feel like the universe can't help but conspire in our favor when we extend this invitation, and this invitation has been burning inside of us our entire life. And then what starts to happen is it's something very natural and organic where when you ask your own being to show you who you are and what you're truly made of, it will start to do so in a way that's very it's your own step-by-step process. It's not something outside of you. It's something that just starts to blossom very naturally. And so what needs to be faced is going to show up in a natural way. What needs to be embraced is going to show up in a natural way. And you're going to be like, wow, if I clear the space and allow my own being room to take me on this inner journey, it is going to grab my hand and we're going to go together in a way that only we can go.
Wow, Sarah, that is fantastic. And I want to invite everyone to experience Sarah on her website. And as I mentioned before, sarabeak.com, S-E-R-A-B-E-A-K.com, and explore, get signed up for the Divine Winks and Love Bites. And check out Red Hot and Holy, A Heretic's Love Story. I just love this. We are down to 30 seconds. Sarah, do you have any last words for our folks here before we get off the air?
Not just to trust themselves.
Sarah Beak, thank you so much for being with us. And I know that the world is going to hear a lot from you. And thank you for your fierce commitment to staying with life all the way. And folks, thank you for being with us for another excursion into some amazing blessed weirdness. And just want to encourage you, as we always do, to go out there and get your shine on. Thanks so much.